This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Are you wearing Husky colors?
Who, me?
You. You look like you're wearing weird.
It's a Seahawk salute to service hoodie.
Oh, it looks purple.
Oh no! I got to get this thing off right now. I need a wardrobe change.
I thought there was some sort of defection from Stanford to the University of Washington. I thought it was a Husky sweatshirt.
Bob, this is not part of the clothing line that we call Wyman.
Okay. Good. That would confuse people.
That's weird. I'm looking now at myself, which I don't like to do. And I do see that it looks purple. That's weird.
Yeah, it looks purple on the screen. It's not purple in real life, though, huh?
This is Wyman and Bob, everybody.
Dave's getting uncomfortable with the questions about his get up there. It is Wyman and Bob, presented by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort. Outside of Dave Wyman's sweatshirt, we're going to talk about a lot today. We got Paul Moyer joining us at 3. He'll share some thoughts on what's going on in the coaching world, what's going on, what the Seahawks should be doing, John Clayton at 4, and then John Morosi will join us at 5, our NHL insider and MLB insider. We'll talk to him about the Kraken and his Hall of Fame ballot and all that good stuff. So a lot to go on this show. And Dave will continue with his wardrobe changes throughout the show, as he is wont to do, and show off his new line, Wyman.
Well, I'll tell you what, if it looks purple, which it does, I can't do it, man. That was the team that I really did not like the most.
The Huskies?
Yeah.
Really?
They were always, like, we had this big rivalry with Cal and everything, but yeah, there was
it the fans?
Somewhat. And then even when, like, I was playing for the Seahawks, I would go to some of the Stanford games. I remember walking with a bunch of older people. Like, these were, like, old people. And, you know, I met up with them, and they were sponsors and stuff like that, and the Husky fans were screaming and yelling at him and calling him all kinds of bad names. I was looking at the guy like, what? You're screaming and yelling at these elderly people? But look, that's just one example.
Yeah.
It does not include all Husky fans.
Yeah. Well, that's not impressive, and I'm sure it's happened in other stadiums too. You got to be able to go out there and have fun, talk smack to a certain extent, but let's keep it in check. Come on. Let's keep it in check. Everybody's having fun watching sports out there. Meanwhile, it's interesting as we look at – I was talking to Lefko about this morning and just looking at a couple of teams that have had a lot of success and their approach to that success. You look at the reigning Super Bowl champs who have been knocked out, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and the Chiefs targeted – what they did with their big areas of weakness is they went and spent aggressively to fix a lot of those spots in order to – jumpstart the runs they're on. And you can look at what the Bucs did. I mean, they had Jameis Winston. They had talent on the roster, even with Winston throwing 30 interceptions. So yeah. They remove him. They bring in Tom Brady. They go out and get Rob Gronkowski. They go out and get Leonard Fournette. They bring in that creep Antonio Brown. They win a Super Bowl. You look at what the Chiefs did. They totally revamped their O-line to protect their $35 million man or $40 million man, whatever he's making. Joe Tooney, Kyle Long, Austin Blythe, they traded for Orlando Brown. They drafted a starting center in Creed Humphrey in the second round. Seahawks went with D'Eskridge with that pick. They also bring in Jaron Reed, Melvin Ingram. So what they did is incredibly aggressive. They spent on proven commodities, whereas you need that delicate blend. You need the mix. You need your draft picks, your cheaper guys to step up, like their center, Creed Humphrey. You need to hit on those guys. In addition, though, you've got to go out and spend on proven talent. And not they seem like at times they'll go for guys that they think are, you know, diamonds in the rough, or they're a bargain for what they could do. They're betting on the come. They're betting on the future of some of these guys rather than what they've done, what they've shown they can do. And I think part of that for me as a Seahawks fan, I would love to see them go out and get that stud, that proven commodity, not a guy, well, he hasn't been given much of an opportunity, and he may turn into something, or he may turn into Brandon Schell, or he may turn into Luke Jokel. You know, he may turn into one of those players. I would love to see him go for, yeah, he's established. It's expensive, but you know what you're getting.
Yeah, well, and that's what, even Tampa, and I, you know, as far as free agency goes, but they have a couple of pro bowlers on their offensive line. So, you know, when's the last time that, you know, you had a pro bowler? I remember, when Dwayne Brown first got here, he was a pro bowl, but according to Pro Football Reference, he hasn't been back to the Pro Bowl since 2017.
Wasn't Britt an alternate?
And I was going to mention that. And oh, Britt was an alternate in, like, I think 2016, wasn't he? I think, yeah. So
I can't remember the year, but I just remember him being an alternate.
But, yeah, and those were the two that I remember. So, I mean, yeah, as far as offensive line goes. And then, you know, you've got Dwayne Brown, who is, you know, getting older. And like I said, since, according to Pro Football Reference, I'm trying to check my memory, but it seems like he was a Pro Bowler, but according to them, hasn't been to the Pro Bowl since he's been a Seahawk, other than the split year that he had with Houston in here. So, and he only played one game there and nine games here. So, just think of what that could accomplish. And, you know, offensive line, I think the reason why we like talking about, you know, going and getting receivers and running backs and, you know, and tight ends and targets for Russ and everything, you know, and with the exception of the tight ends, you know, and I like Will Dissly, and I just feel like he just hasn't been used properly. And then Gerald Everett, I think, can be really special. But, you know, you've got a couple of good wide receivers. We're going to rate the wide receivers today, which we didn't get to yesterday. But, you know, as far as offensive line goes, and you've got a franchise quarterback, you know, maybe the focus this offseason is on that. And if that was the case, I would be okay with that. Even if it doesn't mean going and getting somebody on the defensive side of the ball. Maybe just, you know, if you just re-sign the guys that you have, you know, I would be okay with that. And we can get into that. But, you know, to me, the big move on defense is going to be the defensive coordinator. You know, because you have said this all year too, I think, Bob. We feel like that they have enough talent. You get Jamal back. You get Quandre back. You get Carlos Dunlap. You know, maybe you re-sign Rasheem Green, depending on how popular he is out there. And, you know, in an email to you guys, I just kind of put together, you know, some sack totals of how they could get to 40. And the reason why is because that's typically what Pete Carroll, leading into the 19 season. Now, he got 28 there, and then they had 46 the next year. And what were they this year? They had like 37.
37, I think.
Yeah, so right around 40, you know, and that's really what Pete Carroll, they've not been built on getting sacks. Now, obviously, you want to, you know, you'd love to be the Pittsburgh Steelers getting 50, 55 sacks a year, but that's just not the way this defense is designed. So, you know, if you can kind of piece together, and I didn't even really, you know, give Jamal Adams that many. He's also a guy, if you use him the right way, but I would be all for that. I think, you know, you'd kind of have to go with blind faith as far as a lot of offensive linemen aren't exactly recognizable.
Right.
But if you went and, you know, decided, okay, hey, my two guards, we just got Gabe Jackson last year. We're going to hope that what happens with Damian Lewis isn't what happened last year. It's more about his rookie year. And then even, you know, if you want to try to spend money and sign somebody instead of Dwayne Brown, you get two tackles and a center, you know. And, again, we're not salary cap experts. Not sure how that would fit, but we're just talking about general themes here. Mm-hmm. And as far as that goes, I think it would go a long way to, you know, number one, protecting Russell. We talked about how many times he was sacked last year. And he's going to get sacked just the way his style is.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that just occurred to me that, you know, the Pro Bowl appearances have been few and far between for the Seahawk offensive line since Russell got here in 2012.
Yeah, and he's, you know, the way he plays, and certainly the way he played when he was a lot younger, along with Marshawn Lynch, went a long way into, A, covering up a lot of the holes or problems they had on the line, and B, allowing them to kind of go cheap on the line, to not go out and you know, bite the bullet and say, all right, we're gonna go for this, you know, this Pro Bowl left tackle or this Pro Bowl right tackle, and gonna spend $10 million, $12 million, whatever it would have been back then, a year on them. They could take chances. They were able to take chances on guys, and you know, hopefully this guy works out. Hopefully this guy works out, and they were able to have success. But you know, you don't have Marshawn anymore. Russell doesn't run the way that he did back then when he ran for 849 yards in a season. You just don't have the ability to cover up those shortcomings on the O-line. Those become much more glaring when you don't have those two elements that you had back then. So I would love to see them commit. I mean, the Chiefs did that. The Chiefs O-line was completely overmatched in the Super Bowl, and they go out and they completely, you know, they revamp it. They remake it. All right, hey, this was a liability. This was costing us. This was an impediment to a championship. Let us fix it, and you see what happens. So are they going to be able to maintain it? You know, once Mahomes' contract starts, you know, adding up against the salary cap. I mean, he's got the highest average salary right now, or one of the highest, but his hit against the cap really, I think, starts kicking in next year when we looked at it. So we'll see what they're able to maintain. But in the short term, if you're just talking about, hey, let's capitalize on a window that doesn't appear like it's going to be open that much longer. If Russell's still there, if Bobby's still there, if you're going to keep the veterans there, that window is not going to be that wide open. Capitalize on it now. We talked about, do you go for it? If Russell doesn't sign a new deal, 2 years left on it, do you say, hey, we're pushing all our chips in, we're going for it, or we're going to trade him now and get everything we can for him? Well, if you elect to keep him and just play out those 2 years, go nuts. Spend that money and get what you need. Where's the hole? Fill it.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, I'm looking at Tampa Bay. They have three Pro Bowlers. I said two. Ali Marpet, the guard, Ryan Jensen, the center, and Tristan Wirfs, the tackle. And I think that hurt them because you saw I think he was the right tackle, Wirfs, and they lined up Aaron Donald out there and just feasted on him. And just not so much sacks as much as it was pressures. But yeah, I think that and then, you know, as far as I was going to say, Bob, yesterday, I think when we did D-line, that might have been our lowest grade. Was it? Or
yeah,
I think I gave him a D, but a lot of it was how they had used them. But and so that sounds kind of weird to come back and say, hey, I'm okay with who they have. But, you know, look, as far as D-line goes, you know, to me, it wasn't so much about, you know, this has not been a high sack, high volume defense in the past. When Pete had these really good years, you know, they were getting 40, 42, 45 sacks. And, you know, that's not something that you feature. But, you know, I'm all for building on the line. You know, maybe you get an inside guy. I mean, those inside guys, like, I wonder if Al Woods is going to play. If he even is going to play, what is he going to be, 33, 34, something like that? You know, you've got Monet, you've got Puna. Do you have enough talent? You know, if you can get 8 or 10 sacks out of Carlos Dunlap. And here's what I would say about Carlos Dunlap. His game is not a speed game. And first of all, you see he's in really good shape, but he is a bull rusher, and he sets it up with a little bit of speed, but he has such a good knack. And so, you know, his is about power, and you don't necessarily lose that. You lose speed. Remember you talked about KJ Wright, you know, substituting his speed for being physical.
Right.
And, you know, and I feel like that you can maybe squeeze that out of those guys. I mean, look, he and I don't know what Jamal Adams never really said anything, but both of those guys weren't used the way that they were. So your big move on defense is your defensive coordinator, just getting the most out of the guys that you have. Maybe you re-sign DJ Reed, you re-sign, you know, Quandre Diggs, and, you know, we'll see about Rasheem Green. But for the most part, you spend that money on protecting Russell. You know, let's have a couple of Pro Bowl offensive linemen. And, you know, and we'll take a look at free agency as it goes on. But, you know, that also would go a long way, don't you think, to maybe quieting Mark Rogers in the offseason about talking about, you know, are they committed to winning here? And
I would say this, Dave, if it didn't, then nothing is.
Nothing will please you.
Yeah. You've got a wide receiver tandem that stacks up with amongst the best in the league. It's in the conversation. You went out and spent money on a tight end who was very good, maybe underutilized in Everett. We'll see what they do with the running back. I mean, they re-signed Chris Carson. It didn't work out because of an injury. We'll see what happens with Penny. But yeah, if you went out there and revamped that O-line and made a strong financial commitment to, hey, all right, we are going to establish the run. We are establishing a pass protection, the likes of which maybe Russell hasn't seen before. If he's not happy with that, then he's not going to be happy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's interesting to see what those other two teams did in an age where I think we do get fooled, and our guy from Spotrac is very good about saying, listen, these are the loose numbers. You know, what they do behind closed doors is a different kind of voodoo. You know, they we can look at a number and go, well, this team's got, you know, they're 8 million below, above the threshold. They're in the hole, and somehow they're moving numbers around, restructuring, doing this, that, and the other, and they're signing big names, and they're re-signing their guys. You're like, well, how is that even possible? So even with a team like the Saints we were talking about yesterday, we look at them and go, man, they're $75 million over the salary cap. What are they going to do? Watch and see. I guarantee you when they go into the season next year, they're going to – I don't know if they're going to be good or not, but I think they're going to have some expensive players on that team, and you're going to be going, how do they do that with being $75 million over? And it's what those guys do. They're the masters of just moving the chess pieces around. Just, you know, I'm going to shuffle this money over here, shove a little over here, call this that. This is now termed a bonus. This is now termed this. And boom, it works.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm just looking at some of these guys. I mean, can you go forward with, we're going to have, you know, Ethan Posick, and he's going to improve. And remember Phil Haynes at the end of the year? I mean, Ray Roberts was raving about him, and I was watching him going, wow. And I was like, Ray, am I seeing what I'm seeing? I mean, he looked really good, you know, especially pulling guard out in front of Penny, you know. But, I mean, if you go into it next year going, okay, those guys, Jake Kern, you know, he's going to battle and fight and try to be that starting right tackle. You know, we're going to re-sign Dwayne Brown, which I'm okay. I just felt like it just looked like he had a little bit of a drop off, but I don't know. It's you mentioned we had talked about this a week or two ago about the urgency with Russell Wilson. I'm like, well, he's in his 10th year. He'll probably, you know, play for 20 years, but have we had that urgency to get him? I mean, you've got him some great weapons, of course, but you know, what about protecting him? And I know again that a lot of that is on him, but you look at Tom Brady, he must feel pretty good having three Pro Bowlers. And, you know, you look at the two tackle positions, the center, and, you know, maybe that's where, and I'm all for it, still keeps in line with we're going to focus on the trenches.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not so much the other side. Maybe in the draft you build, you know, get a second, third rounder, guy that you really think can get a pass rush, or a big stout guy inside. But as far as going out and getting proven veterans that are for the here and now, I would be all for that.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And the one thing I'll say, and we'll give our wide receiver grades here in a quick second, is it feels like on the defensive side, they've got the talent that was utilized in a really strange way. On the offensive side, I don't know that they've got the talent on the line. I can't sit there and say, well, I don't know what they were doing with Gabe Jackson. That seems weird how they were using Brandon Shelton. No, they just, for whatever reason, collectively were not good. And defensively, it feels like they've got the talent, but we sat here and scratched our head going, what are they doing? How are they? Why are they using them in the way they were using them? So it feels like they've got things to work with defensively. But we gave out grades for position groups yesterday, and the one group we didn't hit was wide receivers. And we talked about an uneven year for the offense, uneven year certainly for Russell Wilson, which is going to directly impact the receivers. You look at DK Metcalf, had 75 catches on 129 targets, 967 yards. He had 12 touchdowns, which was fourth in the NFL. Tyler Lockett set a career high in yardage, 1,175 yards, 73 receptions. He had 8 touchdowns. And then you have Freddie Swain, Penny Hart, D. Eskridge combined for 42 catches, 466 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So it's some of that's out of their control because of what we just talked about. They had Geno Smith. They had an injured Russell Wilson, a missing Russell Wilson. I'm kind of impressed with some of the numbers that Tyler was able to set a career high in yardage, and that DK is a, you know, top 5 in touchdowns in a year where the offense didn't feel like it had any rhythm at all, and the quarterback play was pretty spotty.
Yeah, well, and also, look, he's 33 yards away from 1,000. Now, the new 1,000 is, you know, 58 yards per game. But how many times did – remember against the two that stand out to me are against the Rams. Well, there's some other ones, too, and some of them were on DK, but mostly at the Los Angeles Ram game where he had Jalen Ramsey beat, and that's where he threw up his arms because that ball got tipped.
Yeah.
So not Russell's fault. But then on the other side – severely underthrown ball that he was frustrated by. And then he ran a little stick route where, you go down 8-10 yards and then turns to the outside, and I don't know if the ball got there too early. It went off his hands. Mm-hmm. So, and you know what Bump always says, you touch it, you buy it. But still, I thought, you know, there was probably 150 to 200 yards that got left on the table because Russ was kind of struggling. Mm-hmm. But with Lockett, I mean, just go back I have a tendency to just think about the Arizona game, and you know, because it's fresh in my mind. But remember the first game of the year, that basket catch that he made, where he looked phenomenal. Over one shoulder and over the other. He is so damn
one
good.
One of the best. I'm giving him a B. I'm giving the group a B, and it's based on those two guys. The other guys, with all due respect, we don't know what D will be. Freddie Swain's a guy. Penny Hart's a guy. They're just. You know, they're fine, but it's based on Lockett and Metcalf. I give them a B.
Yeah, I'm B+. And the thing is, with those three guys, I don't really care because I want the tight end to be the number three receiver.
That's right.
And that's what it should be like.
Yeah. And they were. It was Carl Everett. Jeez, Gerald Everett. All right, I'm thinking baseball. Let's take two.
Slow start to the NFL hiring process, but we have some head coaching hires. The Bears hire Colts defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus. That's how you say it. I learned how to say it. The Broncos go with Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. And one of the hottest names in the market, Dan Quinn, informed teams that he's staying with the Cowboys as their defensive coordinator.
I told you yesterday it was Eberflus.
Yeah, I know. And I corrected myself.
Eberflus. No, that's in all seriousness, that's interesting. The most shocking part of all of this is Dan Quinn. Because right. He seemed to be the hottest name, and he was linked to 5 different teams. So, man, you got to wonder what was said behind the scenes. Did Jerry sweeten the deal for him, or did Jerry say, hey, if McCarthy doesn't get his act together this year, you're the next in line. You're going to be the coach of America's team. I mean, why would he take his name out of the running, which I find really interesting. But we'll see what happens. We'll talk more about what the Bears and Broncos have done here and how that trickles down.
Yeah, Nathaniel Hackett, 42 years old, the hot, you know, offensive coordinator. Quinn, definitely very surprising. But I don't know, man, that's a pretty good organization down there. If you're in with, El Hombre call him, False Face?
False Face, yeah.
If you're in with False Face down there, you got a pretty good gig.
Theorized, but now official, Ben Roethlisberger announced his NFL retirement today after 18 seasons as the Steelers quarterback.
Yeah, now there doesn't seem to be, I was going to say, now the debate starts, is he a Hall of Famer? It seems to be pretty much a consensus. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, it's a heck of a career, 18 seasons, 2 Super Bowl wins. One, they won in spite of him. He was absolutely atrocious in that Super Bowl against the Seahawks. And then, you know, he is who he is. You know who he is off the field or who he was off the field, suspended by the league at one point for his actions off the field and by all accounts, turned his life around. Not sure what kind of guy he is these days, but, you know.
He's a family guy now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I told you I got caught in the middle of that family picture with Russ and his family and Roethlisberger and his family. I'm sitting on the cart waiting to get on the bus, and all of a sudden they come together, like, right there, and they're going to take pictures. I'm like, okay, I got to get out of here.
You should have photobombed them.
I know. You don't want to be the dope in the background. Like, this is a perfect picture of our two families, except who's that guy?
Yeah.
64,000 yards. 418 touchdowns. And I just, I guess he just never made those flashy plays, but he was just solid, throws a great deep ball. So, yeah, he'll definitely be a Hall of Famer.
All right, take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, how will the Broncos coaching hire affect the Seahawks defensive coordinator search? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy Paul Moyer will join us at 3 o'clock. So stay tuned for that conversation. But we touched on some of the coaching moves that have been made. As of yesterday, there were 9 coaching vacancies. And a couple have been filled now that and you wonder, you know, just in terms of staff and you know, there's still staff in place in some of these places that are looking for a new head coach. That's got to be the worst feeling to be, I don't know, to be a linebackers coach, to be a wide receiver coach, to be one of these, even like here with the Seahawks, to be any of those position coaches going, man, I wonder who the new DC is going to be. And are they going to keep me? Are they going to bring in their own guys? I mean,
yeah.
That's kind of a lousy feeling to walk around with at this point, I would imagine. So I feel for those guys right now.
Well, that's coaching, you know. I mean, we talked about it. Like, even the really good coaches have been, you know, if you coach for 30 years, you've probably got six, seven different stops. Six if you're lucky.
Yeah. Belichick got fired. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you're there to be fired at some point, but just you're kind of hanging in limbo if you're one of these position coaches.
Yeah. Well, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But again, you know, we don't want guys to lose their job and everything, but whoever the defensive coordinator is that comes in here, I feel like that's a priority. Like I said earlier in the first segment that, you know, that's going to be the big move. I feel like if that was your big move on defense, I'd be fine with re-signing the guys that they have.
Mm-hmm.
But, now, we haven't addressed this, you know, Bobby and the amount of money that he's going to make and where he wants to be and, you know, is he going to be part of this defense going forward and is his style of play going to fit in? So that's kind of the big, you know, that as soon as that drops, we'll be able to evaluate things. But, hey, look, maybe Ed Donatell comes in and goes, Bobby Wagner's perfect for this defense that I'm going to run, and it's a little variation here and there, but... But yeah, I feel like this is the big move on defense that, you know, and if you're Ed Donatell, you want probably the guys that, you know, that you can surround yourself with. There's no salary cap for coaches, you know.
Yeah.
You can hire some of the best guys. Now, they have to work together. And I think that there's a lot of, even coaching high school, I had problems every year, not huge problems, but, you know, where there were assistant coaches that wanted to, you know, either take over or have more input or sometimes did things that I didn't like. And, you know, that's something where those guys really have to coordinate. You can't be in a pissing match with another coach and, you know, be getting the guys to do the right stuff. So that's another little fine line. I'm sure it happens more in the NFL than anywhere. So it's got to be a crew that all works together. And so if you're coming in there, you know, if you're Ed Donatell, you know, that, and they want to keep all the same, you know, they're going to keep all the same coaches here. It's going to be interesting to see how those personalities mesh because, and we'll talk to Moyer about this because Paul, you know, we both know a guy that was pretty difficult to get along with, loved him to death, but Rusty Tillman was, you know, he was tough sometimes. I mean, and I think with the coaches as well. So that's another part of putting all this together. Like you said, all the moving pieces, that's a big part of it. Just the personalities and how people work together.
Well, I'm curious, just in, you bring up Donatell, and it seems like he's the one that's got the most credibility. He's got a relationship with Pete. I don't know if he is the front runner. It kind of feels like it. He might be just based on that. Maybe he's not. I don't know. We'll find out. But, you know, you wonder if he's more attractive to a first-time head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, first-time head coach. Does he want that experience? Does he say, hey, yeah, I'm ready for this job. Does he already have all of his guys? This is going to be my DC. This is my OC. This is my linebacker coach. This is my wide receiver guy. Does he already have that? Or is he going to lean on some experience like Donatell and say, you know what? I want to keep somebody like that here.
Yeah, could be. Because, you know, I was just to run through his numbers. And, you know, I think other than when he was in Washington in 2008, he had his best year last year, Ed Donatell did, as far as defensive ranks. So number eight in yards. Number eight in passing yards, 215 is what he allowed. And then middle of the pack in both points and run game. But that was really where the Seahawks are lacking. So, yeah, maybe he had that kind of year. Maybe Hackett knows him. These guys all know each other one way or the other. I was listening the other day, Urban Meyer. Now, he was he at Utah?
Yeah.
At one point, yeah. So,
yes.
And I've totally forgot about that, but that podcast you sent me, he was talking about how much he loves Alex Smith, and I was like, oh, how did those guys know each other? Well, they were together in Utah, you know. So I mean, that's that, with Donatell, same type of thing. I mean, these coaches all, they change. I mentioned how many times they change teams, and even the good ones, if you stay somewhere for 5 years, I mean, you're just hoping, gosh, I hope I can get my kids through high school in the same high school before we have to move again. So it's a very nomadic lifestyle these guys are having to pick up and leave all the time. So But yeah, that part's going to be very fascinating to see how that comes through and where the connections are. Every time you get a press book from the Seahawks, most teams do this. They'll talk about the connections between the players and the coaches on this team with the opponent that they're playing.
Right.
And that page is usually like a page and a half, you know, of all the different guys that have been coached with a different guy or played for this guy. So that will be interesting to see how that comes together.
Yeah, the more I think, you know, I was thinking about we had Brady Henderson on yesterday from ESPN.com. If you missed that, it's on the podcast page for you at 710sports.com. But he threw out that phrase, you know, when I was talking about, you know, eyes from the outside, somebody from the inside. And he talked about Clint Hurt being a Pete Carroll disciple, you know, which is not a slight. It's not a knock on the guy. But the more I hear things like that, and it's Pete's defense, and man, we talked about our New Year's resolutions for the team. And one of mine was, you know, for Pete to step back a little bit from maybe his involvement. Let your defensive coordinator coordinate. Let your offensive coordinator coordinate. Doesn't mean you're not involved. I mean, they have to be involved. You're the head coach. But the idea that it's just, I'm bringing in somebody to run my system. I'm bringing in somebody to run to work with my philosophy. Yeah, you got to have some commonalities. But it just, I'm really hoping they pull from the outside. I'm leaning on that even more. The more I think about it, the more, and this is not a shot at Clint Hurt at all. He may end up being a brilliant coach. But just the idea of fresh eyes and somebody who may challenge Pete a little bit, because frankly, it hasn't been working. It hasn't been working. And that's not, if it truly is his defense, then it wasn't all Ken Norton. I'm not saying Ken Norton was great and should have kept him. But yeah. I just want a fresh perspective.
I'll tell you what, though, Bob. Here's one thing that just occurred to me. So, as when Norton got here, that's when he had his best year. So, if you're coming in, and I'm just deducing, you know, based on he just came from Oakland. Mm-hmm. They had been together for a long time. Those were his best numbers by far in 2018. He was number 16 total yards, 17 pass, 13 run. I mean, 11, 12, 11, and it was sacks, points, takeaways. And then slowly, I wonder if Pete, you know, got less involved and was like, okay, Kenny's got this. And they got worse in every single category.
Yeah.
So I'm just posing the question, maybe Pete being more involved is the way that he needs to go.
Yeah, you know, because you could be 1,000% right that we're all, you know, kind of flying blind out here, just listening to people say it's Pete's defense. It's Pete. Well, okay, well, what does that really mean? How truly involved is he?
Yeah, so, and I know we got to go to break, but total yards, they went from 16 to the end of Kenny's tenure, number 28. They went from 17 in pass to 31. As far as takeaways, that was about the same. But, I mean, if you look at all the yardage, you know, Kenny's first year here, it got worse and worse and worse every year. And I just wonder if maybe that could have been Pete taking less control and maybe he needs to take more now.
Well, if that's the case, then get more involved. Whatever led to where they're at, do
the
opposite.
You just want them to be good, right, Bob?
Yep. I want them to do the opposite of what they've been doing the last couple years. So let's do that. All right. One of the brightest NFL minds agrees with us about what the Seahawks need to do next. We'll let you hear what that's all about next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got Paul Moyer joining us at the top of the hour. Stay tuned for that. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. And a couple of days ago, we said the 49ers are a team that we were talking about teams that the Seahawks could most likely resemble when they get all their ducks in a row, if you will. And we identified the 49ers is the team, you know, of the other teams in the West. We were talking about the Rams, talking about the Cardinals, talking about some of these other teams. 49ers seem the most likely, right? Just a power, physical team, running the ball really well, and just having a better quarterback, you know, in Russell Wilson.
Yeah, yeah. Everything Matt, but that.
Yeah, yeah.
Comparable.
We'll upgrade there. But Matt Hasselbeck, who's on with Mike Salk every week, talked about that same thing.
San Francisco is interesting. because it's not like they're getting elite quarterback play out of their quarterback. They're getting good quarterback play. But we're really where they're unbelievable is what they've done recently on defense has been outstanding. They didn't give up a touchdown to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers last week. Their special teams are great, and they run the heck out of the ball. And they have playmakers. You know, Deebo Samuel's a playmaker. They have Kittle, who's a playmaker. And so, like, to me, like, when I think about what Pete Carroll is always talking about, what he wants to be as a team, he's really describing what the San Francisco 49ers have done here of late in terms of they've just sort of found ways to dominate.
How do the Seahawks get there, Dave? Because it feels like they don't have the star running back, if you will. They don't have Derrick Henry. They don't have, you know, Zeke Elliott. They don't have that name guy. It seems like they're kind of like the Broncos back in the day when you were playing, where they just plug in whoever and they seem to have impact. Not that they're running for 1,800 yards, but they just all seem to be very productive regardless of who that is. And I'm going to put that on their play calling and their O-line, I guess. But, you know, what do the 49ers have that the Seahawks don't in order to make that work?
Well, I think it's that running game scheme, just the way that they use certain guys. You know, go back to, I don't even know what Raheem Mostert is up to these days, but, you know, he ran for 220 yards against the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. Elijah, is it Mitchell?
Yeah.
The kid who's the rookie this year, you know, he ran for over 100. He ran for like 965 yards during the season. It was a rookie record. So they just have how they have their run game built is just it's superior, you know, and they use their fullback, which the Seahawks have a good fullback. I feel like, you know, our fullback's a good player. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, really good tight end. So their personnel is definitely, I'd say, a little bit better other than their receivers. I mean, I think, but the way they use Deebo Samuel, how much you want to bet somebody texts in and says, why don't we use DK as a running back?
Oh, we got that a while ago. We got that months ago. People saying that.
Because you see what Deebo Samuel's doing. And again, like I said, if the 49ers somehow end up winning the Super Bowl, everything that they do is going to be genius, and we have to do that. And that's typically how people react. It's just a total overreaction. So,
but I think this is a first react. This isn't a Monday morning quarterbacking. This is us looking at them as they exist right now, going, you know what? That's the closest. You know, that's the closest in terms of similarity to what the Seahawks have been, could be. You know, it's a matter of getting there. It's not, you know, well, let's throw everything we've been doing out the window and copy the Super Bowl winner. They're kind of close anyway.
Well, and it's pretty unbelievable that the Seahawks beat them twice this year. So, I feel like if you can get Shane Waldron going and maybe, you know, what Mark Schlereth always says what is unique about their run game is he said the pre-snap motion gets their offensive linemen, it gets the defense to adjust, and then it gives the offensive linemen better angles to block. So, you know, if you want to seal a guy to the right-hand side and he's head up, that's a tough block. But if you want to seal a guy to the right and he's a little bit shaded to your inside or your left, then that's going to make that block so much easier. And that's one of the things about their run game that that I think is just special, and maybe they can mimic a little bit. But I just overall, I mean, focus on special teams. I think Larry Izzo does a pretty good job with that. They were sketchy last year. I mean, they're very up and very down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe they can, you know, concentrate more on that part. But the fact that they've gotten there with Jimmy Garoppolo, and we have a tendency to pound on Jimmy Garoppolo, who Mark Schlereth tells us is just a beautiful man. I thought that was so funny. I was like, I can't even
look him in the eye.
Yeah, I joke around like, you know, he's really, really good looking like Zoolander, but Mark went all the way in. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, it's amazing what they've been able to do, I guess. It makes it look like, wow, I mean, you can fix your team a lot of different ways. It's like he always says, mitigate your weaknesses. And Jimmy Garoppolo is definitely that. So, yeah, I guess, you know, running the ball, I think, is the one thing that they do the best and that I always think of. And just like what you said in Denver, I mean, that was Mike Shanahan. Mike Shanahan plugging those different guys.
Stream of guys that you'd never heard of that weren't, you know, big time draft picks, came in with a bunch of pomp and circumstance. It just felt like one went down or one left, whatever happened to him, they just plug in another guy and he'd rush for 1,000 yards or he would, you know, pile up huge yardage in a short amount of time. It was amazing to watch that back then. And that's how the 49ers feel right now.
They are that way, yeah. I mean, since he's been there, Raheem Mostert, you know, Debo Samuel, remember Coleman, was I think it was Trent Coleman, Matt Breida. You know, guys like that they have just plugged in and they've worked. And this year it's Elijah Mitchell, a rookie fifth rounder or sixth rounder. Unbelievable. So, you know, that just goes to show. I'm not saying he's a bad player, and I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm just saying that whoever they plug in that run game seems to work.
Yeah, it is really impressive, really impressive. All right, coming up, Paul Moyer is going to join us, talk some conference title games, his thoughts on the coordinator search for the defense here. And I think he wants to weigh in on the Baseball Hall of Fame as well, I've been told. So we'll talk to him about that next. It's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.